Good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli bringing you the Divided Kingdom. And we hope you've all had a good week. I have a number of things to bring to your attention today. All kinds of news. There's so much news going on, it's hard to keep up with it all. But I'm going to lead off tonight with something from Slate News that affects a great many people in this country and throughout the world. It says a top oncologist testifies on explosion of turbo cancer among COVID-vaxxed. Mass murder. This was by Frank Bergman, March 11th of this year. One of the world's leading oncologists has given sworn testimony on the global explosion in turbo cancer cases among young people who received COVID mRNA so-called vaccines, warning that the crisis should be considered mass murder. Canadian oncologist Dr. William Makis testified as an expert witness before the National Citizens Inquiry, NCI. Makis, a specialist in nuclear medicine and oncology, testified before the hearing on March 8th in Edmonton, Canada. In recent years, the NCI has been gathering evidence from experts and victims to investigate the impact of the worldwide mass, quote, vaccination, unquote, campaign. During the hearing, Makis revealed the alarming cases of cancer that he's seen skyrocketing among healthy young people who received COVID mRNA injections. He explains that the cancer spreads so rapidly and so aggressively that they may have become almost impossible to treat. Makis notes that he and other doctors have dubbed the phenomenon turbo cancer due to its rapid spread. However, he added that he now refers to the crisis as, quote, COVID-19 mRNA vaccine-induced turbo cancers, unquote. The oncologist called for using repurposed drugs to treat turbo cancer. He testified, quote, drugs like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and ebendazole have a tremendous impact on cancer and can treat some of the most aggressive turbo cancers, unquote. Dr. Makis' testimony is a damning indictment of government's reckless complicity and one of the greatest medical scandals of all time. His words resonate as both a dire warning and a call to action to expose the truth, protect our children, and hold those responsible accountable. Makis has been at the forefront of exposing the unprecedented surge in aggressive cancers following the mass inoculation campaigns. His findings have led to relentless persecution by Canadian authorities, including the Alberta government. Alberta is now seeking a jail term against Makis for his defiant stance against the mRNA injections. Makis laid out a damning case against the continued administration of COVID-19 mRNA vaccines, especially in children. He revealed an alarming trend after a meticulous analysis of data from Canadian Adverse Event Reporting System, I should say Canada's Adverse Event Reporting System, also the World Health Organization's VIGI Access, I guess that's how you said that, V-I-G-I Access, and the U.S. CDC's VAERS database. Makis discovered that cancers are developing at an unprecedented rate and with unparalleled aggression in vaccinated individuals. He warns that turbo cancers are now soaring among children as young as 6 months old. Makis highlighted how the Canadian government systematically underreports vaccine injuries and deaths. He explains that government officials use vague classifications such as indeterminate or unrelated to dismiss fatal adverse events. Further, and this is Lou speaking now, this to me is the worst thing of all, what I'm about to read the next sentence. It says, further, deaths occurring within 14 days of vaccination are counted as unvaccinated, further skewing the data to mask the true dangers of these injections. Well, again, this is Lou. I think that that goes without saying that the entire data is worthless if you're going to just leave out the critical effects of these things for 14 days, how can you possibly have accurate data? Back to the article. Beyond the medical catastrophe, Dr. Makis exposed the ruthless political persecution of doctors who dared to challenge the COVID narrative. He himself has faced years of legal battles, financial strangulation, and professional exile. Makis isn't the only top oncologist to raise the alarm about the turbo cancer epidemic, however. As Slate News previously reported, world-renowned oncologist Dr. Angus Dalgleish has also issued a bone-chilling warning about skyrocketing cases of deadly cancers among patients who receive the COVID mRNA so-called vaccines. Dalgleish is warning that mRNA vaccines are causing an increase in cancer relapses. Like Makis, Dalgleish also warns of a growing number of cases of turbo cancers. And that's in quotes because that's the name that they have given to these kinds of cancers. Dalgleish argues that COVID mRNA vaccines, and again, I'm not saying it every single time, but the word vaccine here is put in quotation marks because they're not vaccines. As we all know, they changed the definition of vaccines just so it would fit. Vaccines were always assumed to be things that prevented the disease. When I got a polio vaccine as a child, I expected I wouldn't get polio. When I got a whooping cough, I got a smallpox. When I got other vaccines, I assumed they would protect me. And apparently they have. Here I am at a pretty advanced age. Never got any one of those things. But now you see people are getting these so-called vaccines, but they're getting the disease anyway. I have relatives who have been vaccinated more than once, but they've got the COVID-19 just the same. So these alleged vaccines are not vaccines in the usual sense of the word at all. But back to the article. Dalgleish argues that COVID mRNA vaccines are the cause of skyrocketing excess deaths recorded all around the world since early 2021. He asserts that the injections are linked to surges in cancer, which he also describes as turbo cancers. Well, I'll tell you something. We have friends who had been in remission for many, many, many years from cancer. In one case, breast cancer. Another case, another type of cancer. Yet the cancers came back, and when did they come back? After they got the shots, the COVID-19 shots. Is that a cause and effect? Well, we can't say, but we can at least be suspicious about that. Well, moving on to another topic, bird flu. All right, not a human thing, at least not yet, I hope. But from Natural News by S.D. Wells on March 13, 2025, we have this headline. Bird flu scam. Neither Canada nor Mexico have killed a single chicken due to bird flu because, mysteriously, bird flu does not cross borders. Beware of the chicken flu, also known as bird flu, that only happens in America, because the chickens don't have passports to travel to Canada or Mexico. No worries about the USDA or FDA visiting your chicken farm in those countries to kill off all your chickens that might have gained a function Fauci chicken flu, because it's just an American thing right now. The Biden regime somehow still has influence over the poultry industry or industrial complex, and his cronies at the CDC are still pushing the sheeple to get jacked up with some neuro-destroying dirty labs for bird flu. It was all about decimating the food supply and driving egg prices through the roof, while fear-mongering about another pandemic, and while injecting the masses with toxic chemicals that cause infertility, blood clots, and here we go again, turbo cancer. Got questions about bird flu? Fake news has answers for you. Oh, yes. NBC fear-mongering news would have us all believe that the only way to stop bird flu is to kill off all the diseased birds. Got to, quote, wrangle in, unquote, that pandemic, or plandemic, just like COVID. Put all the birds on lockdown and mess them up till we can flatten out the curve. Right, Fauci? Yes, according to federal policy, when a bird flu outbreak is identified, all the birds must be culled. Same goes for humans, but with humans, when an outbreak of a lab-made virus is identified, all humans must be, quote, culled, unquote, using mRNA jabs, kidney-killing remdesivir, and death in 4 days ventilators. Bird flu doesn't seem to be able to cross the border into Mexico or Canada because the chickens can't fly over Trump's border wall. There has to be a logical reason the U.S. bird flu pandemic can't seem to cross the border. And no other bordering countries have killed a single bird to have to save all the humans from sure death. Maybe Trump's wall is too tall. What other explanation can there be? Conspiracy theories are whirling around like a busted screen door in a hurricane. According to NBC News, it seems like another battle keeps popping up day after day, said Andrew Bowman, some so-called influenza expert, and in parentheses of his farmer, Shill, at Ohio State U, College of Veterinary Medicine. He went on, I really hate saying unprecedented, but it sure feels different than anything before, unquote. Sure, Drew, that's unprecedented, like nothing anyone has ever seen before. The Biden regime killed off billions of chickens without any proof there was a breakout of bird flu. It was all hearsay. Which came first, the sick chicken or the gain-of-function leak from a Wuhan lab? Is it safe to buy chickens and eggs? Are the chickens hooking up with the cows like bestiality trainees and spreading the disease to the cows? Maybe the cows are sick. Maybe Americans should stop drinking milk. If you see something, say something. Meanwhile, the FDA continues to recommend cooking your $10 egg until both the yolk and white harden to a crisp, just to be sure. Ready for that gain of function? Avian influenza egg and cheese omelet? No? Wait, there's more fear-mongering from fake news. Professors of medicine at farmer-funded universities across the U.S. claim, quote, birds that have avian influenza die, and they're sick, and they don't lay eggs, unquote. And, quote, that's where the virus is in the dairy cows, said Dr. Peter Chin Hong, a professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, who was paid big bucks to study infectious diseases. Tune your food news frequency to Food Supply News and get updates on more toxic eggs, chickens, cows, seagulls, rats, mice, snakes, and octopus coming to butcher stations near you. And once again, that was from Natural News, March the 13th, 2025. And while we're at it, let's give our website. If you want to contact us, if you want to read about us, you can go to our website. I think we're in the process of having a tribute. It may be up now to Elizabeth. As you know, it was 4 weeks ago today that she passed from this life, went to be with the Lord. So it may be up on the website now. Our website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. And I want to thank many, many people who have sent the kindest kinds of letters of sympathy, letters of support, tributes to Elizabeth. They have just been wonderful to receive, and I've tried to answer most of them, but I'm going to give a blanket thank you right here and now, just in case I missed any. Also, if any of you requested books and didn't receive them, things were very hectic for a few weeks there at the time of Elizabeth's passing, and it's quite possible I could have set something down and never picked it up again. So if you didn't get a book that you requested, please request it again. No need to send money. Just send the request. Send it to Lou Caverly, and that's spelled C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll repeat that a little bit later. If you didn't get that, I'll say it one more time later in the program, maybe a couple of times. Now, I thought one thing was very curious. I'm not one of these people who is automatically against the idea of using solar energy, but I do think that at this point in our history, in the scientific research, it doesn't even begin to fulfill all the needs of everyone. And I thought it was rather curious that two completely separated newspapers that I have access to both sounded the alarm that farmland is being used up for these huge solar, I guess you call them solar farms. So first, let's begin with one from Fort Fairfield, Maine. Now, if you look at the map, Fort Fairfield is way up near the Canadian border, about as high up in the USA as you can get. And here's a little article from the January 22nd, 2025, Fort Fairfield Journal, written by David Deshane, the editor. It's entitled, "Donations Now Being Solicited for Maine's Solar Panel Farms?" Versant Electricity, I guess that's the company name, Versant Electricity customers in northern Maine received a solicitation for donations to so-called green energy providers in that December electric bill. The solicitation for donations is voluntary and is in addition to that which is forcefully extracted from electricity customers via the monthly public policy charge mandated by the Democrats in Augusta to the tune of $11 up to $25 per month, depending on the customer and their usage. The public policy charge is a legislative grift designed to help solar farms in Maine make money by first stealing it from the electricity customers, then sending it to the solar farm owners who rake their cut off the top before divvying the remainder up as credits to their solar energy subscribers. This form of grift is the only way solar panel farms can make any money in Maine, which is one of the most sunlight-poor states in the U.S., with only around 100 days of solar power suitable sunlight per year. Now, there's something I'd never thought of. This is Lou again. You got to have some pretty bright days to make those solar generators work. Dark days, no, not going to work very well. And Maine, of course, not only is it further north than most of the USA, I think there's only one other part of the United States and perhaps a little portion of Minnesota that sticks up into Canada. Other than that, Maine is about as far north as you can get. Well, of course, the farther north you get, the less direct the sunlight. And the weather patterns are such that you just do not get a lot of bright, sunny days there, suitable for generating power. Now, there's nothing wrong with solar power, and I'm not criticizing it. One of my next-door neighbors has gone just about totally solar, generates power for his whole house. It's a small house, and he has the ability to do that, and more power to him, to coin a pun. But another thing is these farms need a lot of space, these so-called solar farms. It's one thing to have one little house being powered by solar. It's quite another to have a community. And they are using up farmland very, very, lots of it. So I think I had another article, which I didn't pick up at the time, that talked more about the fact that you are using up a great deal of farmland. And the interesting thing was there was that very same complaint or criticism, however you want to term it, worry, in Annapolis, Maryland, by farmers from the state of Maryland. Now, here we have Maine and Maryland, two widely separated states that have very little contact with each other when it comes to farming, but both of them are expressing concerns about this trend to take over large acreage and put it into just using it for solar power. And one of the criticisms was, once it goes that way, it's going to be very hard to bring it back. You'd have to dismantle all the solar panels. That would be a job in itself. And although Maryland, of course, is further south than Maine, there is still that worry, is it really going to be cost-effective? And are you really going to save enough to make it worth the tremendous expense? Well, just something to think about. Now let's move on to Zero Hedge. Manhattan apartment rents hit record high amid irrational, that's in quotes, bidding wars. This is by Tyler Durden, again from Zero Hedge, Friday, May 14th, 2025. Manhattan apartment rents surged to new record highs in February, driven by intensifying competition as the spring housing market begins early. Last month, signed new leases in Manhattan rose 6.4% to $4,500, $100 higher than the previous record set in the summer of 2023, according to Bloomberg, citing new data from appraiser Miller Samuel and brokerage Douglas Elliman. Now, did I read that right? This is Lou again speaking. Did I read that right? Going to cost you a month $4,500. There was a time a good many years ago when I thought a $500 rent was outrageous. $4,500. Well, that lets me out. But then again, I'm not trying to live in Manhattan. And here's a comment from Jonathan Miller, president of Miller Samuel. He said, it's one of the most challenging times to be a renter. It's really an irrational market because such a large swath of it is driven by irrational bidding. Last month's bidding wars occurred during a traditionally cool market that doesn't usually heat up until spring. New leases, driven higher by bidding wars, topped 27%, the largest share on record. Miller noted, quote, I would argue that the volatility we're seeing in the economy with the tariffs and the uncertainty that's piling up is keeping consumers in rentals. So apparently, a lot of people are trying to rent. They don't want to commit themselves to buying right now. And it's the old supply and demand. As the demand goes up, the cost goes up. And here's some more from Bloomberg. In Brooklyn, the median rent was $3,600. Up 2.9% from a year earlier, and $350 below the record high set in July 2023. But bidding wars were even more common than in Manhattan last month, happening in 35% of deals, and the average price per square foot hit an all-time high for the borough of $59.15, up 7% from a year earlier. In the part of Queens that includes Astoria and Long Island City, the median rent rose 7% from a year earlier, the fourth increase in 5 months to $3,466. All right, well, that gives you a little idea about that. I guess I'm going to have to stay in rural Maryland. I don't think I'm going to have the wherewithal to get myself up to Manhattan. Now, do I have any desire to do so, for that matter? I had something here that was talking about the, here it is. We have some headlines. Let's take a few minutes for some headlines and short articles from Brother Bruce of American Prophecy. He has been kind enough to send us some things we can use. And here's another money matter. We all like money. We shouldn't love it, but certainly it does come in handy. This headline says, our $101 trillion problem. This is the number one tool the elite use to enslave us. This is from the Epic Economist from YouTube.com, and it was dated February 10th, 2025. And it reads, people have spent far too much time in the dark, but finally an awakening has begun. We're starting to learn about the tools used by the elite to enslave our population, and the number one tool they use to control us and to keep us dependent on that system is debt. The financial powers of America and the world manipulate debt to enslave not only individuals, but corporations and governments. You've probably heard the proverb, quote, the borrower is the servant of the lender. And we have, I think, Brother Bruce put to see Proverbs 22:7, and he's right. That proverb says the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is a servant to the lender, unquote. So, like the Bible says, nothing new under the sun. This has been going on an awfully long time. Going on with the article, it says, that's a universal truth. Yet billions of people are deep into debt, inevitably becoming servants of the money powers. Each time you borrow money from a financial institution, you're not only legally obligated to pay that money back, but you also signed up to pay a significant amount of interest on your loan. Oftentimes, the interest ends up being bigger than the loan itself. And let me interrupt for a minute. This is Lou speaking. This is something I don't think I knew as a young man until I took some accounting courses. Now, here I was, a math major. But you see, that was all pie-in-the-sky kinds of math. It wasn't the practical kind of math you get in accounting, bookkeeping, that sort of thing. And when you take out a loan, whether it be an auto loan, whether it be a loan for a home, you are paying back interest based upon the outstanding amount that you still owe in the loan. So in the early years of the loan, you are paying back a fabulous amount in interest. You may pay back $1,000, $800 of that might be for interest in those early years. Gradually, as the loan is paid off, it's what's called amortized, you pay less and less interest, and you pay more and more on the principal, the actual amount of the loan. And for a 30-year loan, which is fairly ordinary for houses, you may be paying back a couple times what you borrowed, maybe even more. And supposedly, they're supposed to tell you exactly how much you're going to pay back over the lifetime of the loan. So if you do take out a loan, that should be available information that you can look up. Now, getting back to the article, so the borrower has to devote a great deal of their labor to earn money for the lender. Of course, there are situations where it is necessary to take out a loan. But what the United States has been doing for the last few decades goes far beyond necessary borrowing. Today, the U.S. federal government is over $36 trillion in debt. State and local governments, as well as corporations and households, have also piled up huge amounts of debt. In this chart, and I don't, of course, I can't give you the chart over the radio, but we'll just read what it says here. In this chart from the Federal Reserve, we can see how the total amount of debt in the U.S. system has skyrocketed from $30 trillion during the mid-90s to $101 trillion last year. So in other words, it's five times as much. Now, this is a good time for me as a mathematician to mention a few little things. If you want your eyes to pop out, and if you've never done this before and you have access to a computer and to the internet, or a smartphone, anything that gets the internet, or you can go to the library to do it, type in a search for something called U.S. National Debt Clock. U.S. National Debt Clock. And it may also say real time. What that will do, and it took a few minutes for it to come up on my little phone, but the phone I was using is an old one and a rather inexpensive one at that, but it finally did come up. What this will do is it'll give you a second-by-second readout of the U.S. national debt and all kinds of other statistics related to that. And you can actually watch it increasing. I don't think it ever goes down, that's for sure. You can also, you can watch these numbers growing even as you stand there just or sit there just watching. Now, at the moment that I clocked it this morning, which was about 12:20, in the afternoon, this afternoon, the national debt was $36,603,654,000, 900,000, rounded off to the nearest 100,000. And it was growing so fast you could hardly even keep your eye on it because it was those last few figures in the 100,000s were changing second by second. Now, if you want to get a feel for that, you almost have to write it down. When you say it out loud, it just doesn't make an impact. You almost have to write this in writing. Put a 36 down, put another 6, and then put, let's see now, how many zeros? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 11 zeros. That gives you a little better idea. Now, if you really want your eyes to pop out, here's another figure. The debt, the national debt, divided up among all the U.S. citizens, shows that every single citizen owes about $107,074 worth of that debt. So I owe that. All of you, if you're citizens of the USA, owe that. Are they going to make us pay it back? I hope not. I don't have that kind of money. Oh, better still, I'm a taxpayer. Probably most of you are. If you're a taxpayer, your share is $323,000. That's your share of that national debt. In other words, if we split it up among every man and woman and child that's a citizen, or better still, that's a taxpayer, wouldn't be children then, it would be about $323,000. So that is an impressive thing. And a somewhat scary thing in the U.S. government, which really means the Congress and the executive branch, seem to have no desire, except for a few staunch individuals, no desire to bring this under control. And what's going to happen? Good question. What happens when there's not enough money to pay the interest? Then what happens? Will they devalue the currency? I don't know. I don't like to think about that. I don't think any of us do. Well, moving on now to a couple other headlines. InfoWars reporter Jamie White targeted on Ukraine's deadly kill list before his murder. March 11, 2025, by Baxter Dimitri, The People's Voice. And it has a paragraph underneath the picture. InfoWars reporter Jamie White, 36, was brutally murdered outside of South Austin, Texas apartment on Sunday night, March 9th, 2025, just a little over 2 weeks ago. And that sent shockwaves throughout the InfoWars community and beyond. Alex Jones, the outlet's founder, announced the tragedy on Monday as reports emerged that White had been shot and possibly stabbed in a suspected homicide. Well, another headline, major clinical study reveals ventilators killed more COVID patients than the virus. This also was from The People's Voice, March 6th, by Baxter Dimitri. A bombshell study published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation confirms ventilators killed more COVID-19 patients than the virus itself, triggering deadly bacterial pneumonia in ICU wards and vindicating conspiracy theorists who have been sounding the alarm for years. And among those conspiracy folks, I guess you would have to include Elizabeth and myself while she was still living. If you'd like a copy of our book, we still have a few copies left, and I can always order more if we have enough demand. Our book, COVID and Coming Chaos, is available. We're not selling it. We're giving it out. We ask that you make a little contribution for the postage if you would like a copy, and I will be more than happy to give a copy to anyone who just requests it. Once again, you can request it by writing to me, Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. So if you'd like a copy and never got one, or if you can use more, if you have friends who would take it very seriously and would like a copy, let me know and I will send you some more. And as I say, I can order more if there's enough demand. Now, a few other headlines. South Korea issues emergency mRNA warning. Quote, 6 billion people now have VAIDS, unquote. Not AIDS, but VAIDS with a V. The harder they try to bury the truth, the more undeniable it becomes. A team of top South Korean researchers has detonated a scientific bombshell. A massive gold standard study of 9 million people exposing the dark reality of COVID mRNA shots. Far from delivering lasting protection, the vaccines are systematically dismantling immune systems, triggering a devastating, a devastating condition called VAIDS, V-A-I-D-S, short for Vaccine-Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. Then, in a different topic, Christians and religious minorities are being slaughtered in the radical Islamist killing spree in Syria. This is March 9th, 2025, by Joe Hoft and joehoft.com. In the subheadline, radical Islamists who have taken over Syria are killing innocent Christians by the thousands. This nightmare is happening now. The Biden regime overthrew the Syrian leadership, which resulted in a vacuum for power. This led to radical Islamist terrorists taking over and killing innocent Christians and non-believers across the country. Biden bragged about supporting the Islamists who took over the country. Now, what's the Dutch government know that we don't? Here's a headline. Dutch government issues urgent World War III warning to citizens. Quote, stockpile food and water now. This was dated March 6, 2025, by Sean Eddie Tabatabai at thepeoplesvoice.tv. The Dutch government has urged citizens to begin stockpiling food, water, and essential supplies in anticipation for World War III breaking out in the coming weeks. Dutch Justice and Security Minister David Van Wiel said on Wednesday that citizens need to also prepare to manage, quote, without the central government, unquote. Euronews.com reports the Dutch Justice and Security Minister David Van Wiel issued a recommendation on Wednesday for all citizens to compile 72-hour emergency kits in case of a natural disaster, cyber attack, or war. It is an update to existing advice to have a kit at home, which lasts at least 48 hours. Items the citizens are recommended to have include cash, canned food, water, and batteries. Well, I'll tell you something. This is Lou speaking. If there's a major war, having supplies for 48 hours or 72 hours is hardly going to be much help. Certainly, it would be wise to have far more than that. Switching topics again, is the most dangerous volcano in America roaring to life? An eruption of the Yellowstone supervolcano could potentially destroy the United States. And it has a diagram here. It shows a upsurging of granitic magma. And it says in parentheses, partial melt. And it is right over Yellowstone caldera in the Yellowstone Park. And the description says, is it possible that the Yellowstone supervolcano is gearing up for a major eruption? When most people think of Yellowstone, they tend to conjure up images of Old Faithful, Yogi Bear, and a television show starring Kevin Costner. But the reality of the matter is that Yellowstone poses a very serious threat to all of us. Yellowstone National Park in Wyoming is actually sitting directly above a massive supervolcano. The magma hotspot underneath is about 300 miles wide. The supervolcano has erupted before, and scientists tell us that when it fully erupts again, it could potentially destroy the United States. Well, that's the headline. I don't have all the details, but if you wanted to look that up, that was by Michael Snyder in conservativefiringline.com. That's the website, conservativefiringline.com, and the date was March 9th of this year. And here's a little biblical information. Has Noah's Ark been found? Boat-shaped mound in Turkey was underwater 5,000 years ago, scientists say. the same period as the biblical flood. This is by William Hunter, March 10th, 2025. And I do not have a website for this, but I'm sure if you do a search, you could find it. According to the Bible, Noah's Ark saved humanity and all the animals from certain annihilation during an ancient flood. Now, 5,000 years after those flood waters receded, scientists claim to have discovered the location of the famous boat. An international team of researchers claims that a boat-shaped mound 18 miles south of Mount Ararat in Turkey is actually the fossilized remains of a wooden vessel. Well, very interesting. They have had some reports of the possible location of Noah's Ark in that region of the world before. We'll see if this develops into anything. And then one more headline. Trump gives Hamas final warning to release, say that again, to release all hostages, or it is over for you. This was March 6th, 2025. President Donald Trump has just issued what he described as a final warning. That's in quotes. A final warning to the Palestinian militant group to release all hostages, both living and deceased, or face severe repercussions. The stark ultimatum posted on Trump's Truth social platform underscored a hardening U.S. stance amid ongoing tensions in the Middle East, especially following the October 7, 2023 terror attack. According to a report by Daily Mail Online, published on March 5th, Trump's message was unequivocal, quote, release all of the hostages now, not later, and immediately return all the dead bodies of the people you murdered, or it's over for you. All right, so those are some of the headlines. Thank you to Brother Bruce for supplying us with those. Now I'll get back to some of the other articles. This one's from Natural News. HHS Secretary moves to eliminate food safety loophole amid growing concerns over chemical additives. This is by Bell Carter, March 14th, 2025. HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. directs the FDA to eliminate the GRAS, self-affirmation pathway, a regulatory loophole that allows food companies to introduce new ingredients without formal FDA approval, raising concerns about unregulated additives in the U.S. food supply. The GRAS system, established in the 1950s, permits food manufacturers to self-certify ingredients as safe without FDA oversight, leading to the introduction of potentially harmful additives like BHA, a possible carcinogen, and others with limited safety data. A 2022 study revealed that 99% of food chemicals introduced since 2000 were approved by the food industry without FDA review, with only 10 out of 766, that's 10 out of 766, new chemicals undergoing formal FDA scrutiny between 2000 and 2022. Kennedy's directive aligns with the Make America Healthy Again Commission's goals, aiming to address health risks posed by food additives, particularly for children, and increase transparency by requiring companies to notify the FDA and provide safety data for new ingredients. Critics highlight flaws in the GRAS system, including the lack of routine safety checks for additives once on the market, while industry leaders express concerns about potential regulatory burdens, though consumer advocacy groups support the move for safer food standards. So that's a quick summary. Then a little more detail. On March 10th, Health and Human Services HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced he has directed the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, to explore eliminating the self-affirmed, generally recognized as safe pathway. So that's what those initials, GRAS, are short for, generally recognized as safe. This regulatory loophole allows food companies to introduce new ingredients without formal FDA approval, et cetera, et cetera. I'll skip down a little bit. Critics argue that this system has allowed potentially harmful additives such as butylated hydroxyid. Now, let me see if I can attack this one here. Butylated hydroxyanisole, or BHA, a possible carcinogen, to enter the food supply unchecked. A 2022 study by the Environmental Working Group, the EWG, revealed that 99% of food chemicals introduced since 2000 were approved by the food industry itself, bypassing FDA oversight entirely. Between 2000 and 2022, 766 new food chemicals entered the U.S. market, and only 10 underwent formal FDA review. All right, let's just skip down. There's another section entitled The Grass System. Remember, that means generally recognized as safe, a legacy of lax oversight. It says the GRAS pathway was originally designed to streamline the approval of common food ingredients, like salt and vinegar, which have long histories of safe use. However, as the food industry evolved, the system became a gateway for introducing novel chemicals without rigorous scrutiny. Under current regulations, companies can voluntarily submit GRAS notifications to the FDA, but they are not required to do so. As a result, the FDA reviews only about 75 voluntary submissions annually, leaving countless additives untested by federal regulators. All right, and that just goes on to describe more of that. I won't read it all. Says Kennedy has already met with CEOs from major food corporations, including Kraft Heinz, General Mills, Tyson Foods, Kellogg's, and Pepsi, to discuss increased food safety measures and transparency initiatives. Dr. Mona Calvo, a researcher at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, notes that many GRAS-listed additives were approved decades ago when home-cooked meals were the norm. And she said, quote, today, with the rise of ultra-processed foods, there is greater exposure to chemical preservatives and artificial ingredients, unquote. Well, I know I've picked up a few things that really look good in the last few weeks. Since my wife's death, I've had to be on my own with cooking. And like most men, I'm not much of a cook. So I would sometimes just pick up something that's ready to go, ready to eat in the grocery store. And I was astounded at the number of chemicals, many of them unpronounceable, that you see on some of these foods. Now, not all. I try, and Elizabeth always cautioned me about this, I try to pick up things that are simple and easy to understand. For example, I've got a jar here of peanut butter. And what's the ingredients? Simple. Organic, dry, roasted, blanched peanuts. That's all. Nothing else. But if I were to pick up a common brand of candy, chocolate candies with a little coating on the outside, I won't give a brand name, we have things like lactose. Well, that might be natural. I don't know. Soy lecithin. Natural flavor, which sometimes is a disguised form of some of those things we don't like, artificial sweeteners. Elizabeth often would say that that's a disguised form of, now I can't think of the top of my head, but one of the common forms of artificial sweetener that's strongly suspected of causing brain damage. And cornstarch, well, that's pretty natural. Corn syrup, that's pretty natural. But then we get to making those look real colorful. Blue, number one. Yellow, number six. These are all food dyes. Red, number 40. Yellow, number five. Blue, number one. Yellow, number six. Red, 40 Lake. Yellow, 5 Lake. Blue, 2 Lake. Blue, Conoliva, I guess that is wax. Gum acacia. And this is not one of the worst offenders. Pick up some food sometime in the grocery store. Have a look at some of the ingredients, and you'll see what we mean. All right, let's see now. Immigration. Here's a headline from Slate News by Nick Hamilton, March 14th, 2025. Trump administration reveals Biden-era ICE data was faked to hide scale of border crisis from the public. President Donald Trump's administration has revealed that an investigation into past data from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has found that the statistics had been falsified to hide the real scale of the border crisis from the American people. The Trump administration has escalated ICE enforcement, achieving more arrests in a short span than those executed throughout the year 2024. However, the Trump administration alleges the ICE statistics were falsified under former President Joe Biden to give a misleading impression of immigration enforcement. Acting ICE Director Todd Lyons has been vocal about accusations that the previous administration's statistics were inaccurately reported. According to a comprehensive internal ICE review, many instances classified as arrests during Biden's presidency were, in reality, cases where individuals were processed but released. Lyons claims that the Biden administration was cooking the books to manipulate public perception. Lyons stated, quote, "They were purposely misleading the American people." And Lyons emphasized the alleged miscalculation amidst misclassification of processed individuals was widespread. In the fiscal year 2024, ICE recorded 113,431 arrests, though a majority were classified as pass-through arrests. Such arrests often involved minimal enforcement actions, contrasting significantly with current measures. Since the Trump administration commenced, there have been 32,809 ICE arrests from January 20th to March 10th. 2025, nearly matching the 33,242 immigration-related enforcement actions completed at large in fiscal year 2024. So for the Trump administration, I'll just interject, 2 months had almost as many as an entire year under Biden. Officials have clarified that recent operations are focused strictly on enforcement rather than brief or symbolic actions. And going down, furthermore, over 1,150 suspected gang members were apprehended, a sharp increase from the 483 arrests of such individuals in the comparable period the previous year. And just skipping on down a little bit here, a significant procedural change undertaken by the Department of Homeland Security was the replacement of the CBP One app with a new system called CBP Home. This tool is designed to facilitate orderly self-deportations and assist with immigration procedures. The move reflects broader efforts to streamline immigration management. Well, that gives you some of the highlights there. So things are being done more effectively, no doubt about that. Okay. And now some lifeside news. Top FDA lawyer resigns after Josh Hawley exposes defense of abortion vaccine mandates. The subheadline: a Biden Department of Justice lawyer who defended abortion and vaccine mandates will no longer be the top legal representative for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for the Trump administration, following public scrutiny of her history. This is by Calvin Freeberger, again from Lifeside News, Thursday, March 13, 2025. Dateline, Washington. A lawyer who defended abortion and vaccine mandates will no longer be the top legal representative for the United States Food and Drug Administration for the Trump administration, following public scrutiny of her history, the FDA announced Thursday. On Tuesday, Axios reported the selection of Hillary Perkins for FDA chief counsel, and that she was the choice of Dr. Marty McCarry, President Donald Trump's nominee for FDA commissioner. McCarry testified before the Senate this week he would spearhead objective reviews of abortion pill and vaccine policy. Commitments conservatives had little reason to doubt, given his credentials as a critic of the COVID-19 establishment. Quote, We've been able to recruit higher quality personnel to HHS than at any time in its history, HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said. He went on to say these are individuals who will return the agency to gold standard science, evidence-based medicine, and recalibrate its trajectory toward public health rather than industry profiteering, unquote. However, the report noted that Perkins had been the Justice Department attorney who defended the Biden administration's relaxation of rules governing the dispensation of abortion pills in court. The next day, Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, said he directed his team to look deeper into the matter and found that, quote, this Biden lawyer has argued for Biden's outrageous pro-abortion rules in many cases. She also argued for Biden's draconian, discredited vaccine mandates, Hawley added. Her brief, in one case, said objections to COVID-19 mandates, quote, verge on the conspiratorial. For example, there is no public health emergency and that the American people have been psychologically manipulated, unquote. The brief also stated that Biden's orders mandating vaccination, quote, strike a careful balance between the federal government's compelling interest in stemming the spread of COVID-19 and certain individuals' medical or religious reasons for declining vaccination. On Thursday morning, the FDA announced that Perkins had resigned from the position, effective immediately. It did not elaborate as to why. While the outcome appears to demonstrate the public scrutiny and pressure can still produce results, the situation raises new questions about the views and judgment of McCary himself. The Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, the Health Committee, voted 14-9 Thursday to advance his nomination to the Senate floor for final approval. Trump has taken a number of pro-life actions since returning to office, but he said on the campaign trail that he would not enforce federal law prohibiting abortion pills from being dispensed by mail. Well, our time has run out for today. It went by very quickly. We had a lot of things to cover, a lot more that still can be covered. So I hope you'll join us again next week for the Divided Kingdom. Once again, visit our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and write to us. You don't have to send money. We always welcome it. But we love letters, too. Just write to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you, and good night.